This is an encore presentation of Disclosure, brought to you by the Voice of Prophecy.
Deep underground, below street level in Loveland, Colorado, we are sitting in the Voice of Prophecy studios. This is Disclosure. My name is Sean Boonstra. I'm sitting in studio today with Alex Rodriguez from the Discover Bible School. And Alex, thank you for bringing in our art installation today to the studio.
Isn't that incredible?
It is incredible. I know that late last year, a lot of people heard that that a banana sold for $120,000 at an art facility.
Amazing.
Yeah, somebody duct taped a banana to the wall in an art gallery, and somebody actually paid $120,000 for that. And then they were disappointed, I guess, because a few days later, a performance artist, that's what he called himself, a performance artist came in, walked up. You can see the video of this. It's on YouTube, I think. And he walks up, pulls the banana off the wall, and eats a $120,000 banana. And I noticed you brought a banana into studio today. And so we have our art installation, if you're sort of watching on the simulcast and looking at the video of this. We have taped a banana to the monitor here, and I would say that is a fine-looking banana you brought in. That's probably worth like $140,000.
That's right, $140,000 at least.
Yeah.
At least. Now I am going to eat it.
Yeah.
Later on.
But that's performance art.
But that's performance art.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think I'll charge for eating it too.
Oh yeah. Well, we're going to do it on if you eat it on camera.
That's got to be worth at least $60,000.
Yeah, we can raise a lot of money for the ministry with the banana on. Although we've even upped the game. It is not taped to the wall.
That's right.
No, it's taped to a TV monitor. So like, there's motion graphics behind it. Motion banana. That's what I'm going to name this thing. Motion banana. And we are taking bids. Put it in a sealed envelope and send it to Box 999, Loveland, Colorado. And give us your bid on motion banana.
And we might leave it up there for a month or so.
Yeah, that was the thing about this artist. Like, did nobody ask what happens to a real banana taped to the wall like 3 weeks in?
It becomes a different, it's a changing art.
And so rotten banana on the wall, is that, I don't know,
has it appreciated life
or depreciated? Well, it is life, that's true. Yeah.
So that makes it more valuable, I think.
Yeah, maybe so, because you got to watch it deteriorate. What has our world come to? I think we have run out of civilization. The nihilists of the 19th century, they apparently have won. We don't find meaning in anything. And a lot of the art that's out there actually reflects that philosophy of nihilism. There's no meaning in this universe. And so you can attach meaning to anything, including a banana to the wall.
A delicious banana. That one is still delicious because it still has some green on it.
That's the perfect banana, is it not?
That's the perfect banana.
Like just a little bit. It's got to be just a little crisp. But if it's too green, then it makes your mouth pucker, right?
Oh, yeah. That thing is terrible.
Yeah.
But this one, I can feel it from here.
You can feel it. Oh, that is your banana.
Yeah, it is my banana.
And you can have it. All right. But after all the bids come in, you can have
the banana. I can have a banana.
Yeah. And so, okay, that's not really what we've tuned in to talk about, although the end of civilization is a part of our subject today.
Absolutely.
Because the Bible does forecast that. And what we're going to look at today is Discover Lesson Number 7. Alex and I have been working our way through the Discover Bible course that is available to you. Go to voiceofprophecy.com, look at the study tab, and look for Bible studies. And what you're going to find is that this is completely free to you. The banana is $120,000, but the Bible study is free.
What a deal.
Yeah, it is. It's a good deal. We're going to actually be looking in this lesson at Daniel chapter 2, aren't we, Alex?
Because, we sure are.
And this one makes me excited. I've talked about Daniel 2 on the program before. If I were to credit one single chapter of the Bible for why I'm a believer today, it's this one.
That's right.
You know, I grew up in a Bible-believing home. My parents read the Bible to us every night after dinner. But that, I know, God doesn't have any grandchildren. I really wasn't a Christian or a believer, went a little wild in my youth. But this is the chapter that arrested my attention and forced me to contemplate the possibility that God is indeed real and that there is a rhyme and a reason to our existence, a rhyme and a reason to the universe. Daniel chapter 2, it blew my mind. You're really going to want to grab a Bible today and get online and take a look at the material there. Again, it's voiceofprophecy.com. And I think we want to click on the study tab. That's where it's located,
the study, right?
The study tab, and look for the Bible lessons. You want the Discover Bible course, and we're looking at number 7. All right, Alex, take us into lesson number 7. It's called About Your Future.
Well, one of the things that this lesson does for me, or Daniel 2 does for me, is it shows me the foreknowledge of God, the fact that God can indeed see what's going to happen before it happens.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of folks in this world that say that they can do the same.
Oh, yes,
but
there are.
When it comes down to it, they fall way short. The accuracy, just the sheer accuracy of Daniel chapter 2, so many years spanned in this particular prophecy of kingdoms rising, kingdoms falling, and to a T, everything has happened. And that just brings so much confidence.
All right, we're looking at a prophecy here that's 2,600 years old, never been wrong in all that time.
Never been wrong.
Wow.
Never been wrong.
You know, you mentioned those who claim they can prognosticate. Years ago, I used to do disaster restoration. So if your place flooded or you had mold remediation to do, all those things. In college, I did that. And I went into one house, and there was a psychic living there. And as I was working on, actually, she had managed to bleach the carpet in a rental unit, and wondering, can you restore this? Well, the answer is yes, I could. I knew how to dye it back to original color. And she was reading my aura and predicting my future while I was working on the carpet. And it, I know, we laugh. And I'll tell you this much, she got absolutely nothing right. Not even one. I mean, she should have just said, you know, I'm getting the sense that you are going to get older tomorrow. And then she would have been right. But she just couldn't get anything right.
Did she, was she able to decide whether you were going to fix her carpet or not?
No, she was on pins and needles. That's the funny part. You know, now that you mention that, she's in big trouble with the landlord. If it's like a 1 foot ring of bleach in the middle of the living room, and she had no idea if that was going to get fixed or not.
That's funny, man. I tell you what. Well, and that's what's so nice about the Bible. You know, when God says something in Scripture and He says it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Right.
You can bank on it.
It's 100% track record.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's start off here looking at Daniel chapter 2.
Okay.
And the question is, in the second chapter of Daniel, what symbol did God use to represent world history from Daniel's day to our day?
Knowing it was Daniel 2 today, I printed the entire chapter on a sheet of paper so that I can mark it up.
That makes life a lot easier. This is verses 31 through 33, if you have your Bibles with you. Daniel chapter 2, 31 through 33.
Right.
Why don't you read that for us, man?
Okay. This is Daniel now speaking to King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar is the king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, controlled the ancient Near East in those days. Anyway, here we go. You, O king, Daniel says, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay.
That's a pretty neat picture. And of course, when you go to Daniel chapter 3, you get to see that that he took that somewhat seriously and ends up building
a
figure, but it's all of gold instead of being multiple metals. But
right, yeah, and that story in particular, they're forcing Daniel's friends to worship an image, or they'll be destroyed. It does foreshadow something that happens in Revelation chapter 13, where you are forced to either worship the image of the beast or you are killed.
And that's right.
But here, this is a dream that the king has had. He doesn't understand it. His own wise men can't tell him what it means. And so Daniel's a young Hebrew, probably not even 20 years old at this point. He's a captive, and he's just come in and explained this statue that Nebuchadnezzar saw made of different metals, right? The head is of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze, the legs of iron and feet partly of iron and partly of clay.
And of course, he's at the edge of death right here, because if you remember the story, this king is madder than a hornet right now.
Right.
He's called in his wise men, his magicians, astrologers, soothsayers, and they've pretended to be able to tell dreams for years and interpret dreams. And now he's asking of them something that he's never asked before. He's not just asking for the interpretation of the dream. He wants to know what the dream was.
Oh, he's so saying, they're going to have to reach inside his head and get this
get right
dream.
Into his head. Wow. And they make some amazing statements here. One major statement that they make is that no other king has ever asked of this of any magician, astrologer, soothsayer, and that this kind of knowledge only resides with the gods. Mm. Of course, in their minds, the gods that they serve are
Marduk, Ishtar.
Yeah. But there's some element of truth there. We can't tell. We can't read other people's minds. We can't see what's in there in a dream. You know, how in the world
can
you read that? So Daniel hears about this. In fact, the guard comes out to get him because the king is so mad. He's ordered all the wise men destroyed and killed. Daniel happens to be one of the wise men. Daniel asks to be brought before the king. And before the king, he asked for time, and the king somehow grants this, although the wise men had asked for the same thing, and the king had said absolutely not. For Daniel, he sees something different. And Daniel prays with his three friends, and God gives Daniel the same dream. And that's why it's so incredible to me. It's not just the prediction of these kingdoms that rise and fall, but it's the story of a king who had a dream, and somebody had to tell him the dream first. And God not only gives him the dream, but he gives the very same dream to Daniel. And that's what we're reading right here.
So what we've got now, we've got a statue that is being used to represent world history. I'm looking at the question here from the study guide. And so it turns out that each of these medals represent successive empires in
the ancient world.
You know what I find interesting about them is they decrease in value as they go.
They sure do.
You know, gold to silver to bronze to iron and then clay, but they also become more brittle as they go.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's a symbol of worldly kingdoms, human kingdoms, that means that the longer we exist, we're not evolving into something better. We become more hardened. We become less valuable as we go. The human race left to itself, according to this dream, is sliding towards a very bad end game. We're not evolving to something higher.
That's right. And I think that this next question, what happened to this great image, is going to show what the result is. You know, what happens when something becomes more brittle? What happens when it's not of any value? And we'll see that here in Daniel chapter 2. We're coming close.
Yeah, no, I see a break there. So maybe during the break, I'll let you have the banana back so that you can have a banana break.
I can have my breakfast.
You get a banana break. We're going to take a station break. But what you're going to want to do during this break is go to voiceofprophecy.com and click on the study tab. We are looking at lesson 7 of the Discover Bible Guides, Daniel 2. This is the chapter that made a believer out of me. This is what nailed it down, made it firm, that there must be a God in heaven. And as a matter of fact, that phrase shows up in Daniel chapter 2. Daniel openly declares to the king of Babylon, there is a God in heaven. And if you have ever doubted that, if you have ever wondered if God really exists, if there's actually any evidence, well, we're about to uncover some of that. We're looking at Daniel chapter 2. You are listening to Disclosure from the good people at the Voice of Prophecy. And we're going to come back right after this break and pick up with the question, what happens to this statue that both Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel saw in a dream? We'll be right back.
Are you searching for answers to life's toughest questions like, where is God when we suffer? Can I find real happiness? Or is there any hope for our chaotic world? The Discover Bible Guides will help you find the answers you're looking for. Visit us at BibleStudies.com or give us a call at 888-456-7933 for your free Discover Bible Guides. Study online on our secure website or have the free guides mailed right to your home. There is never a cost or obligation. The Discover Bible Guides are our free gift to you. Find answers in guides like, Does My Life Really Matter to God? And a second chance at life. You'll find answers to the things that matter most to you in each of the 26 Discover Bible Guides. Visit BibleStudies.com and begin your journey today to discover answers to life's deepest questions.
All right, we are back from the break. The banana is down off of the wall, no longer worth $120,000, but it's going to become performance art here,
right,
Alex, and then it'll be worth like $1 million.
A million.
We ought to make sure you eat it on camera so that the world can enjoy the performance art. All right, we are looking at Daniel chapter 2, and it's a prophecy of the world's history given in advance to the king of Babylon about 600 years before Christ. It's a statue made of different metals, gold, silver, working from the head down, gold, silver, bronze, iron, clay. And it represents world kingdoms, as we were observing before the break, that they become more brittle and hardened as they move along and perhaps less valuable. The Bible doesn't explain it that way. That was just sort of a personal observation.
Sure.
But just as we were headed into the break, you were looking at question 2 of the Discover Bible Guides. This is the discussion sheet that goes with those. We're looking at lesson 7, voiceofprophecy.com, study tab if you want to follow along. What happened to this great image, Alex?
And that's in Daniel 2, 33 through 35. 33 summarizes what we just read. But its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. That was that was the end of that image. In verse 34, you watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. There's a lot going on in this.
Yeah, there really was. So we've got the statue. This stone flies out of the sky, and it says it's not cut out with hands.
That's right.
So this is an indication that this is, you know, if the statue represents human kingdoms, what this is telling us is that this stone is different. Human beings didn't do this, didn't design this.
That's right. This is coming from God himself. And what's interesting was the statement that you made earlier about the fact that the metals were getting less valuable and they were getting more brittle.
Mm-hmm.
And so here comes the end of that, and it breaks up into pieces by this stone. But that's not the only thing that happens. We see that they're crushed together. They become like chaff from the summer threshing floors. Then they're carried away. The wind completely carries them away. And the stone becomes a great mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what does that mean?
Well, I'm looking at a number of things here. I notice it hits it on the feet, so this is sequential. If these kingdoms happen in order, the stone hits it on the feet, so this happens after all of these kingdoms have taken place. So,
that's right.
So this is a chronological prophecy. And then it destroys the statue. It becomes like chaff. I know that we live sort of mostly in a post-agrarian society.
That's right.
Some of you listening do live in an agrarian society, and thank you, by the way, for putting food on our tables. But chaff, when we used to thresh, I remember back in the old country, they still used threshing sticks, put the wheat on a tarp, and they would beat it and then throw the tarp in the air, and the wind would carry the chaff, the useless bits, the husks away in the wind, and then only the wheat would fall into the tarp.
That's neat, because that of course gives us references to God separating the wheat and the chaff, as we've been told, and there's a separation happening here in Daniel chapter 2. But I think the thing to keep in mind is that
You should have had the banana during the break.
I should have had that banana,
yeah.
So we could build a little bit more of that phlegmy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
but these are kingdoms. These metals are kingdoms. And at least at this point, we're going to look at it at the end of the lesson again, but at least at this point, we can see that something is bringing these kingdoms to an end.
Right.
And we'll talk about that here in just a bit.
Mm.
But question number 3, what world power is represented by the statue's head of gold? And what I love about this is the fact that we don't have to guess on this stuff.
God actually places the answers in Scripture. So Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, and then Daniel chapter 2, 36 through 38.
All right. Daniel 1, verse 1, now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams and his spirit was so troubled that he left him. So the lesson is referring to this so that you recognize, all right, this is dealing with Nebuchadnezzar, who happens to be the king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire. And you'll notice that his wise men are called Chaldeans. It's in the region of Chaldea. So there's Daniel 1, verse 1. We're referring to Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom.
And then we...
Boy, you are in rough shape.
I'll tell you what, man. Yeah. And then Daniel chapter 2, Daniel 2, 36 through 38.
Mm-hmm.
We have some good stuff here at 36. This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. Of course, this is Daniel still speaking. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold.
Ah, so it's not just Nebuchadnezzar. We're looking. He tells Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold, but in the same breath he describes the kingdom that Nebuchadnezzar has. So the head of gold, according to the text itself, is Nebuchadnezzar and his Babylonian empire.
And his Babylonian. And the question is, why gold? Does that make any sense? Is that just something that God pulled out of a hat and said, okay, I'll just call you call you gold, or is there more to that?
Well, I think there is. You know, Herodotus, the father of history, some people call him, and other people call him the father of lies because they think he exaggerated some of his stories. But we all know who the real father of lies is. But Herodotus visited the ruins of Babylon, and even centuries later, his jaws on the floor, he said, you understand, this entire kingdom was overlaid with gold. This is the wealthiest thing, the most decadent thing I've ever seen. And to this day, you still use the word Babylon to describe over-the-top decadence.
That's right. That's
over-the-top
right.
wealth.
No. It was an incredibly wealthy kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar had great power. It was a large kingdom, and so it's been known as the Golden Age. It ran from 626 BC until 539 BC, and when we look at Daniel chapter 1, we see that it's Babylon that actually has gone in and destroyed Jerusalem. God has used this to punish his people. This is where Daniel and his friends come from. They're taken to Babylon as captives. But yeah, so God assigns this head. This is the head of gold, and he calls it Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. This is where we start. And this probably brings us to another principle I'll just hit, and then we'll leave it. But
sure.
When we're dealing with Bible prophecy, especially through Daniel and Revelation, we find that there's always a starting point, and that starting point seems to be the time of the prophet
when the
prophet is living. So here's Daniel, here's where the prophecy starts, and then from there we go into the future.
Moves all the way down, usually in these prophecies, particularly in Daniel and Revelation, to starts in the day of the prophet, as you say, moves down to some last day event.
That's right,
Ryan.
That's right, all the way
Which
through.
I don't want to give the hand away.
No.
Here's something I just wanted to point out before we move on. It says, well, Daniel says in verse 37, God has given you a kingdom. And this is the fascinating thing, because Nebuchadnezzar does not worship the Hebrew God. He probably worships Bel Marduk and
right.
other Babylonian gods. And yet God is using him. The Bible calls him a servant on occasion. And it makes you wonder, how many times do we give ourselves credit for what goes on in our lives, our accomplishments, what we've been permitted
right,
to do
right.
in life? And I think we're all going to find out one day that God permitted that.
That's right.
He really was still driving. So God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to have this kingdom, and in part because his own people, the Hebrew nation, had gone astray and needed a bit of a corrective to get them back on track. And so God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to rise to this peak, and he's completely ignorant of the fact that it's Daniel's God who gave this to him.
And Scripture calls Nebuchadnezzar, God calls him his golden cup, and he uses a heavy hand against Jerusalem. But, you know, Nebuchadnezzar is a proud man. He's a proud king, and I guess it would be hard not to be if you had that kind of power and that kind of kingdom. That Daniel chapter 1-4 really is it's a battle between two kings. It's a battle between two creators. You have God, who is the creator of all things, and then you have Nebuchadnezzar, and the pinnacle of all this is Daniel chapter 4.
Right.
As Nebuchadnezzar is walking out, he's looking out, and he looks at all this glory and splendor and gold and all this stuff, and he says, "Look at what I have built."
Right.
And it's interesting to me that at the end of all of that, in Daniel chapter 4, verse 37, this is where Nebuchadnezzar ends up when it's all said and done. "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he is able to put down." And of course, he just got done from 7 years of being basically a wild
An
beast
animal,
eating grass out there. And so God is using all of this not only to tell us what's going to happen in the future, but also to save this king. And it's incredible that God even looks at kings themselves and says, "You know what? I'm going to influence them too."
Wow. Yeah. And I guess that removes all the temptation to have a we and they attitude as Christians. It's not us versus the world. They're all God's children, and he's working with people that may not know him formally yet.
That's right.
May be in a relationship with God.
Absolutely. All right. So moving on, question number 4. What world power followed Babylon and is represented by the chest and arms of silver?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Daniel chapter 2, verse 39, and Daniel chapter 5, 28. Why don't you take 239? I'll take 528.
239, "But after you," he's still speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, "but after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours." And so that's just the first half of the verse, but that's the part we're looking for. Nebuchadnezzar, another kingdom is going to come in your wake. It'll be inferior, but it's going to replace you.
That's right. And King says, Daniel says to the king, "Your kingdom is not going to last forever," which I've always thought about. Here's Daniel sitting before the monarch, the greatest monarch on the earth at the time, and he's telling him this issue of you're the gold,
right?
You've got all this power, but
yeah, you're going to lose it.
So we go to Daniel chapter 5, because in Daniel chapter 5 we actually have recorded the fall of Babylon.
Right. Okay.
And so there's this great party. You'll have to just take Daniel chapter 5 and read that. But there's this great party that's happening. The king now, which is, I believe, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, is in power inside the city, and he throws a party. And the reason he throws a party is because he is surrounded. He's surrounded by another kingdom, and we'll get to that in just a minute.
Let's slip it in here. 5 verse 28, "Your kingdom," this is speaking to Nebuchadnezzar's grandson now, "your kingdom has been divided and given to..."
The Medes and the Persians.
Yeah, given to the Medes and the Persians.
Medes
so we know
Persians.
That's a coalition empire that did indeed replace the Neo-Babylonian Empire. I always just shorthand it as the Persians. This prophecy is mind-blowing. It goes on. It has gotten everything right for the last 2,600 years. We do have to take a break, but we're going to find out what comes next here and what that might mean for you.
Disclosure is just one of the programs brought to you by the Voice of Prophecy, like the audio adventure program Discovery Mountain. Discovery Mountain is a weekly Bible-based program for kids of all ages and backgrounds. Your family will enjoy faith-building stories with Jake Donovan, Mr. Simon, and others in this small mountain town. Each summer, campers visit Discovery Mountain, where they sing songs, learn about God, and reenact a Bible story with the help of drama teachers Miss Wendy and Miss Tamara. With 24 full episodes every year and programming every week, your family will have something uplifting to listen to every week. Listen to episodes on demand and watch video features from Director Doug at DiscoveryMountain.com or on your favorite podcast platform. That's DiscoveryMountain.com.
we're back from the break. I had this idea during the break, Alex. I mean, if we can raise like $120,000 by taping a banana to the wall, I was going to tape my water bottle up next and then auction it off, but they took away the tape. I think they knew that I was going to keep taping things to the wall all day if I still had it. My tape is gone.
Well, I ate my banana.
Oh. Yeah. But did you do it on camera? I don't know. Capture him eating the banana? Oh, opportunity lost. Oh, we did. Oh, good.
We got it.
There you go. That's $1 million. That's $1 million performance art.
I tell you what.
Installation.
Nobody can eat a banana like me.
No.
Actually, my...
Did you use all 32 of your teeth?
All 32, yeah. I just mashed it. I do. My brother-in-law, his son, when he was little, he would practically peel the banana and just shove the entire thing. And he would just kind of
like putting it through a wood chipper.
Yeah, it's a you know, it's just this incredible thing, man.
Oh, man. All right, let's get on target. We're looking at
Medo-Persia.
Medo-Persia. We're looking at the Medes and the Persians who replaced the Babylonians. We're looking at Daniel chapter 2, discover lesson number 7. And we've just discovered that in this statue, head of gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, feet of iron and clay, they all represent world kingdoms, and the Persians have just replaced the Babylonians.
Right. So Babylon goes down in 539 B.C., and in this Medo-Persian empire, two kingdoms together in one. What do you know about the Medo-Persians?
Well, a fair bit. Boy, you go up in a can of worms, because Cyrus the Great is one of my key sort of studies in life. I've spent a lot of time on him because the Bible uses him as to prefigure Jesus in different ways. He comes and liberates God's people from Babylon, the way Jesus liberates us from Babylon Earth in the last days, and so on. He overthrew his own grandfather, the Mede. He foreshadows Jesus in a number of interesting ways, and you open a can of worms, and we won't have time to pour all the worms on the table and study them. But he was an unwanted child, and his grandfather tried to have him murdered, much the way that Herod tried to have Jesus murdered.
Fascinating,
because he felt threatened by it. And Cyrus the Great today is still known as a great. The Greeks continued to admire Cyrus long after he was dead as the ideal emperor, the ideal king. Even Alexander the Great bowed, you know, paid deference to Cyrus the Great, saying, man, there has never been a king like this. And so he comes in. Can't get into the impregnable city of Babylon. You couldn't get in there. The walls are too thick and high. And what he notices is that the Euphrates River goes under the wall of the city. And on his way to Babylon, crossing the Gindes River, it drowned his favorite horse. He got so mad that he had his soldiers dig 180 channels on either side of the river, Herodotus tells the story, to lower the river to ankle depth. And he kind of,
humbled the river.
Yeah, humbled the rivers. You know, that on radio, this didn't make sense. I'm sort of job finished, hand wipe. But he sees the river going underneath the wall and discovers an ancient lake bed upstream from it. So he diverts the Euphrates into an ancient lake bed and creates a highway under the wall. And he goes. Yeah, it's quite a story. We could do a whole show on Cyrus.
And probably the most fascinating thing of all is that the Lord predicted that, the Bible predicted that before it happened.
Isaiah actually lays it out in detail. You know, we have the drying up of the Euphrates predicted. We have the king inside the city getting terribly afraid, and all predicted before Cyrus was even born. It even uses Cyrus's name in the book of Isaiah. Everything's dinging in the studio because none of us bothered to turn off our Wi-Fi.
We didn't turn anything off.
Yeah.
I just had the 40,000 things that I had on my calendar.
Yeah,
just
blow my calendar here. Yep, mine too.
Technology is wonderful.
Yeah. All right, so there we got the Persians. Cyrus conquers Babylon. We're now in 539 BC, and you can read about the fall of Babylon in Daniel chapter 5. We referred to that a moment ago, where it names the Persians, and that's a fascinating story. Cyrus's name is not in that chapter, but historically we know that's who did it.
That's right.
The city down.
And of course, we're only two medals down.
Yeah, I know, and we're better than halfway through the show. But
we better
speed up.
But what that tells us is that Medo-Persia is not going to last forever either.
No, that's right.
And so this is question number 5. What world power followed Medo-Persia and is represented by the belly and thighs of bronze? Daniel 2:39, And then we get a little glimpse here in Daniel chapter 8, which is fascinating. But
right.
So if you'll take one of those.
Well, Daniel 39, the second half of that verse, Daniel is telling the king another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. So he's predicting again the Persians will fall and someone, a bronze kingdom, will come along and take their place.
So then we go to Daniel chapter 8. So let me ask you, why are we going to Daniel chapter 8 when we're looking at Daniel chapter 2?
Here's the thing. In Daniel, you've got a number of these prophecies that parallel each other, Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, Daniel 11. And in Daniel 8, and they cover the same ground over and over. Daniel 7 covers the same ground but uses animals instead of a statue. Same thing happens in Daniel chapter 8. It uses animals instead of a statue. But in Daniel chapter 8, it starts naming them by name.
That's right.
This is how we know that the Bible got it exactly right. It names the kingdoms.
So we're looking here in Daniel chapter 8, and this is verse 21. And it says, "And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece."
Right.
"The large horn that is between its eyes, it's the first king."
Now that is Greece as in the country. It's not a kingdom of Greece, like a greasy kingdom.
No.
It is the kingdom of Greece as in Macedonia.
Could have fried my banana.
You could have fried your banana. Oh, I like
That's
cooked banana.
Oh, man, those are delicious.
Yeah.
But Greece, this was Alexander the Great.
Yep.
And apparently,
if you get into the details in chapter 8, we won't today. It'll come up some other time.
That's right.
It actually has a symbol especially for Alexander, but you go ahead and read ahead and find that.
But he defeats Medo-Persia. This is what we're talking about today, the fact that Medo-Persia did defeat Babylon, but Medo-Persia does not last either. This is probably bringing Nebuchadnezzar some comfort. It's not just
me that's going to lose. It's everybody.
God's no respecter of persons. He's just going to take them all out. But sure enough, Alexander the Great, just like it was predicted, ends up defeating the Medo-Persian Empire.
Battle of Arbela, or Gaugamela, in 331 B.C.,
and so from there, we end up having a new world power, and that world power, we find out, is not going to last either. But
no.
Question number 6, what world power followed Greece and is represented by the legs of iron?
Mm.
This is Daniel chapter 2. We're back to Daniel chapter 2, and we're looking at verse 40.
Right.
If you grab that
the
for us.
"The fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others." Now, I think any student of history right now, Alex, already knows what's coming next. We've had Babylon, Persia, Greece.
That's right.
And then
the kingdom of iron, and the kingdom of iron is Rome.
Rome, right? You know? And this is the kingdom that rules the world when Jesus is walking the face of the planet. He dies on a Roman cross. This is long lived, right? The Romans had been there for about 800 years B.C., but they really rise to become a world empire. 168, Battle of Pydna, they defeat the Macedonian troops, and they bear sway over the world in some form or other for centuries to come. As a matter of fact, in the eastern part of the Roman Empire, they were still there 1,500 years after Christ almost.
That's right. You know, what's fascinating to me is the fact that God doesn't pull a lot of this stuff out of the air. There's reasons why it's gold and silver and bronze and iron. It matches these kingdoms. Even the animals themselves in Daniel 7 and Daniel 8, this really matches the kingdoms that they describe, and it's just God has got a detail. He doesn't just leave us guessing. He even in the small little details, he gives us indications and clues, and that to me is tremendous. So the kingdom of Rome is the one that is in power here, and of course it's the kingdom of Rome that is in power when Jesus is born.
Right.
And so this is a kingdom that lasts for a long, long time. What part of this is question number 7? What part of the image represents the breakup of the Roman Empire?
Mm.
And now we're
my favorite subject.
We're moving from the legs, the iron legs, and we're moving down to another part of the of that image. Daniel 2, 41 and 42.
Okay.
"Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile.
Hmm.
And so we move from iron to a mix of iron and ceramic clay.
Right. So in a way here, what we have is that this Roman Empire is going to continue in some fashion, but it's not going to be the same. It will be broken. It will be weaker. It'll be broken. It says it will be divided. And of course, historically, we know that's exactly what happens.
Exactly. It was divided into many parts.
Right. So this is my favorite history. Man, we could have an entire show on this one. But 410, the Goths sack the city of Rome. Then Genseric and the Vandals come up from northern Africa. They're known as God's Scourge. That's what they called them in those days. As a matter of fact, Genseric called himself that. Then we have the Huns hit after that. And finally, by 476 AD, we've got a barbarian king of Italy who just goes in and takes the last Western Roman Empire emperor off of his throne. Augustulus Romulus is on the throne in 476 AD, a Germanic king, Odoacer. You know, I can't pronounce some of these guys' names, but marches in, takes them off. There's never been one ever since, and the Western Roman Empire breaks into what becomes the modern nations of Europe.
That's right. 476.
How's that for a summary? It's my favorite subject, and I got it done in a minute and a half.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot here that too, though. You just mentioned Europe, and I think that's one thing that we have to keep in mind, because it is a key for the Book of Revelation. The fact that all of this is happening in succession in the area of Europe.
Yeah.
So, you know, Babylon is out that way, and Medo-Persia and Greece and Rome. This is all the same territorial area. This is
right.
The same land area.
Right.
And that becomes important as we keep going and look at Revelation later.
Here's what's interesting is the Romans are actually the first empire to control every single foot of beach on the Mediterranean Ocean. They own the whole thing from Spain round over the top down to Palestine and then across northern Africa, and then it suddenly breaks up. It's the impossible thing. And you go back and read, you know, church fathers like Augustine, they're in shock. How could Rome fall apart? And they can hear the barbarians in the distance burning mm-hmm. libraries and smashing things. But it was going to happen. There's no question. And so we don't have a fifth world empire now. We have the shattering of the Roman
That's
Empire.
Right. That's right.
And the iron of Rome stays there all through European history. We still have the remnants of Rome. We're still living with the remnants of Rome to
right,
this day,
right.
But it's in a broken state. And so again, completely accurate. It didn't guess three empires. It didn't guess five. The Book of Daniel names the empires. It gets it exactly right and says that the fourth one was going to shatter into pieces. And I know we got to get on with the music is playing again. How will we run out of time so
much? I have
no
idea.
I don't know. We spent too much time taping bananas to the wall.
Yeah.
I think that's it. But there's more here, because this doesn't leave us in 476 AD. It moves into the present, and it's going to affect your life. Stay tuned.
Searching for answers to life's toughest questions, like where is God when we suffer? Can I find real happiness? Does my life really matter to God? Or is there any hope for our chaotic world? The Discover Bible Guides will help you find the answers that you're looking for. Visit us at BibleStudies.com or give us a call at 888-456-7933 for your free Discover Bible Guides. Study online on our secure website or have the free guides mailed right to your home. There is never a cost or obligation. The Discover Bible Guides are our free gift to you. Find answers in guides like A Second Chance at Life. You'll find answers to the things that matter the most to you. Visit BibleStudies.com and begin your journey today to discover answers to life's deepest questions.
And with a mighty wave of Harim's hand, we are back on the air. That's how they let me know that we have to start talking about the show again.
The mighty hand.
The mighty hand of Harim. That sounds like a movie.
It does sound like
the
a movie.
Mighty Hand of Harim. We're going to put you in a screenplay, Harim, the Mighty Hand of Harim. All right, we're looking at Daniel chapter 2 today, this incredible prophecy. It has a statue representing the kingdoms of the world, or these empires that would begin in Daniel's day and move forward through time. And it accurately predicted the Neo-Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, the Roman Empire. And just before the break, we saw that it also predicted a divided Roman Empire where the iron stays. It still kind of looks and behaves like Rome, but it breaks in pieces. That's in Daniel 2 and verse 40. And we left it there just before the break.
That's right. And so now we're dealing with this broken up kingdom, broken up into multiple parts, and the image itself conveys that it is partly strong and partly weak. And so the question is, would this kingdom ever get back together again? Is there a way of uniting this,
right,
this Roman Empire? I mean, it used to be a great united kingdom.
And we hear a lot of talk about that.
We do.
I even see that in Christian books. Oh, the Roman Empire will be reunited. So we probably should check in with the prophecy, see if that's so.
We probably should. And I think over the years, there's been a lot of attempts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look at, even if you, just looking at the euro itself, you know,
yeah,
people saw that coming and they're like, oh man, this is it. All getting
Roman
together.
Empire's coming back.
But
yeah.
But now we have Brexit and everything else happening. But how does God describe humanity's efforts to reunite the divided Roman Empire into a united Western Europe? Daniel 2:43.
Okay.
Run that for us.
As you saw, this is Daniel speaking to Nebuchadnezzar again. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. So there it is.
There it is.
It's not coming back together.
There it is. If people would just read their Bibles, they'd
Well, yeah, and I know I hear Christians actually say, oh, there's going to be a reunited Roman Empire. And Daniel 2 says, no, there's not. And what's fascinating, you know, is as we're in the 5th century AD, 476, the Roman Emperor's yanked off his throne. It's the end of the empire. There have been how many attempts to put it back together? I mean, I'm thinking of some key examples, 800. Charlemagne, Charles the Great, is put on the throne and they declare him to be the Holy Roman Emperor. We're back. And that just falls apart on him. It doesn't go anywhere. And I know that some commentators, I laugh when I read it, that Charles was neither holy nor Roman nor an emperor in the end. And Charles V in Spain, he almost pulls it together, but in the last minute he gets gout of all things, and he can't go into battle anymore and divides his empire among his sons, and his sons are idiots. They're just absolute idiots, and they lose control of it. Louis XIV, the Sun King of France, full of himself, he says he's going to pull it together. Who else? Napoleon. Napoleon's going to pull it together.
Right.
He marches into Russia, loses out of 600 and some odd thousand men, loses 500,000 of them. The Kaiser starts to spread himself across Europe. He's defeated. Hitler in our own day and age. Oh, our own day and age. I just dated myself.
Well,
but yes, I am from the middle of the 20th century.
Desert Storm, I remember that.
This will be it.
You know, there was a bit of a wanting of rebuilding the kingdom down there and stones that were already going up to try to rebuild Babylon. But, you know, that God says it's not going to happen. And when God says it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. However, as we're talking, I thought to myself, you know, even when folks read it in the Bible, if they were read it in the Bible, there's this stubbornness. So in Daniel chapter 2, Daniel tells the king all of these things that God has declared. And at the end of that, it's as if Nebuchadnezzar accepts it. But then immediately in Daniel chapter 3, he turns around and he says, he's going to defy whatever happened in Daniel chapter 2. And so I think that Satan gets into people's minds, and even if they read it in Scripture, they get so stubborn, they're like, you know, yeah, it says it there, but I'll show you. I'm going to rebuild this thing anyway. And then, of course, God has to humble.
Right. And so here's the thing is that, Rome would last, right? And in the eastern part, it lasted a little bit bit longer before you know the Ottoman Turks took down Constantinople. But in the West, and there is a reason that this all focuses on the Western Roman Empire. We're not going to give that away today. You got to keep studying.
That's
There's a very good reason it focuses on the Western Roman Empire. But it does tell us there will be something there of Rome. And our civilization today is still quite Roman, legally speaking. Actually, there are remnants of all of these empires still in our culture today. Babylonian Empire, Greek Empire. We're Greek in our philosophy. We're Roman in our administration.
That's right.
We're Persian in some other thing. There's a bit of it left, but it says the iron's going to last to the end, just never pull together in the same strength. It's always going to be broken and fragile. And, you know, the founder of this program, I believe it was him, as World War II was breaking out, HMS Richard said, based on Daniel 2, I know Hitler's going to lose. And this was at a point where Hitler looked like he was going to win. And people laughed. He said, no, Daniel 2 says nobody pulls this back together. Turns out he's right. Hitler dies in a bunker. Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting here for me, too, is the change of the metals. So you have gold going to silver. And gold is over. Now it's silver.
Mm-hmm.
Silver going to bronze. Silver's gone. It's bronze. Bronze to iron, same thing. But when you transition, as you were alluding to, when you transition from iron into the feet, there's no clean cut of iron.
No.
There is a continuation of iron. And so although it may not look the same as it did during that iron kingdom, iron age, it still continues. And that's what I think Scripture is trying to tell us, that it doesn't die. It's not fully defeated. It continues all the way until the next event.
Right.
And so what is that next event? This is question number 9. How does Daniel describe the culmination of this prophecy in the second coming of Christ? Daniel chapter 2. 44 and 45. And that says, "And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure."
Wow. So something of the iron continues, but then it's replaced. This stone represents a kingdom that basically, we talked about chaff earlier, and all these, the statue crumbles into powder, essentially, and blows away, and is replaced by this stone, this God of heaven will set up a kingdom, it says, in the days of these kings. In other words, we're already living in that moment. We're living in the moment where the days of these kings, what does it mean? It means the divided Western Roman Empire. Well, we're still living under that. There's still a remnant of Rome. We've never been able to pull it together. And at some point in the existence of that fragmented Western Roman Empire, God himself sets up a kingdom.
That's right. Well, let's talk for a moment here, if you don't mind. Let's talk for a moment about the time we're living in compared to Daniel chapter 2.
Okay.
So Babylon came and went. Persia is gone. So is Greece. So is the Roman Empire. And now we've been in this divided type of Rome for a long, long time. The very next thing that happens, there's no other medals that come from this.
That's right.
It's over. You know, there's not even any putting shoes on this. There's nothing else. The very next thing is this rock, which represents Jesus establishing his own kingdom, strikes it and destroys the image. So, what does that tell us about what we're living through right now?
Well, we're looking at, I mean, my goodness, what a big question for a few minutes to go, but we saw that the metals degrade, they become more brittle. We are living in the moment where human civilization is fragmented and weak, and I'm watching the world around me. The last vestiges of civilization appear to be disappearing. I mean, for crying out sideways, we glue a banana to the wall and sell it for $120,000. We're falling to pieces. And as we fall to pieces, I think that the appropriate response for Christians is not despondency. It's we are actually getting there. going to happen. God's going to replace all of this with his own kingdom. And that means he watched us. He saw the suffering. He saw the pain. And he finally basically blows the whistle. Hey, kids, everybody out of the pool. You've had enough now. Now let me show you how the world should be.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And so things are happening quite rapidly in the world today. But it's as if God is bringing all of this to an end.
Yeah.
And we're coming there quite quickly.
And because he doesn't force people, he's allowed us. This is our own choice. The world is the way it is because we chose this. We wanted this. We said to God, no, thank you, sir. Look, we'll do it our own way.
That's right.
And he's let it run its course. But a God of love eventually stops the pain and suffering, saying, look, I'm not going to force you into my kingdom, but I am going to bring my kingdom because I can't stand the pain and suffering anymore.
Enough is enough, you know.
Yeah.
And he's done that throughout Scripture. We see those models in the Bible where God puts his foot down and says, okay, it's you've chosen, you've decided this is the way you're going to go, but I've got to bring this to an end.
Mm.
We got one more question
here.
Yeah, we do. Let's tackle that one. What is in the near future of our world or for our world? This is out of Revelation 11:15.
All right.
Go ahead.
Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. That's one of my favorite verses there.
Yeah. Isn't that Handel's Messiah there?
Yeah, forever. And now that's going to play in my head all
day. That's amazing. Yeah. He actually sang into the mic. That's incredible.
Yeah.
This is the whole point. God is going to establish his kingdom. Jesus is going to establish his kingdom. He will be king forever and ever. This is the promise given to David. You know, I will maintain a man from your lineage on the throne forever.
Right.
And here it is.
When God solves the problem, it's going to last forever, that solution. There is nothing after the kingdom of Christ. There is not another human rebellion. That'd be a show in and of itself. God has set this up so that we got to play with our own experiment. He didn't force our will, but he's going to bring it to a point where we want the kingdom of Christ, and it will last forever, and there will never be a going back to sin and suffering again.
What a blessing that is, Revelation 21. There's no more pain, no more suffering, no more death, no more crying.
Yeah.
Man,
That's another favorite.
I can't wait. No. You know, Isaiah describes this beautiful picture of what heaven's going to be like, and we'll probably get to that in another lesson. But what an incredible promise and what incredible prophecy. The fact that God has predicted from Daniel's time all the way to the end, to the very end, what will happen, and it has been accurate.
This is what got my attention, what brought me to faith. It's like, all right, 98% of this has already happened, and it's got pinpoint accuracy. What are the odds that this last bit, that Jesus will return, is also accurate? And I started to dig into Daniel, and the things we're going to study when we go a little bit Daniel.
Right.
This was lesson 7, folks, about your future. I've got a question for you, though. If that eternal kingdom is coming and God is going to overthrow the kingdoms of this world, put an end to pain and suffering forever, and he's going to set up the kingdom of Christ, the decision for you is, will you choose? Because God doesn't force anyone in, but he offers you a choice. Would you choose to be part of that eternal kingdom that is coming, live in the presence of God forever, where he promises that he will reach out and wipe away all tears, and set straight, make right everything that we did here? That's the choice that you are faced with. I hear the music, Alex. That means it's time to sign off. Thanks for joining me in studio today. And until next time, you've been listening to Disclosure from the Voice of Prophecy. God bless.